Now, in talking about the hierarchies, besides all of the complications you've undoubtedly already noticed, there lies the further one that because these beings have been connected with humanity for so long, they've shown different faces. They've shown different parts of themselves to different peoples. So they have many names. Now, I mentioned already how these beings tend to appear, particularly the third hierarchy, in the forms of ancient mythologies as gods and goddesses. And one might say that when one god or goddess is the son or daughter of another, that means that they are one hierarchical niche down from the one whose child they are. So this is how it was shown that the higher hierarchies have been around longer, they're older, and they've had more time to develop. Even within the Christian terminology or the Judeo-Christian terminology on which Steiner drew, there are multiple names. There are Latin names, there are some Hebrew names which have been retained, there are Greek names for these beings. Not so much because the Greeks call them this, but because the early Christian writers tended to write more in Latin and Greek than any other language. And there are the names that Steiner has given them. So, again, I will try to be consistent in the way I allude to them, but now and then I may slip up and I'll try to correct this in the visual representations. And I want to mention again that it's really good to just hear all of this first before you try to sort of look on a chart, whether it's a stable chart or a chart that's in movement. There's something good about just trying to sort of imagine these beings before we try to look for a physical connection to them. So the names of the beings of the third hierarchy, angels, that's it. That's the only name they have, I guess because they're so close to us. Archangels are also known as spirits of fire. And there are reasons for this. And archai, spirits of personality. Now that seems odd because I mentioned how distant, relatively speaking, the archai are from the human being. So personality we think of as practically the core of our being, especially if we're American. Why would they have that connection? And this is because of the way the hierarchies work, that the upper beings in a given hierarchy, the top third of that hierarchy, their task is in a way to think through a responsibility, to think through a next step. So we might say that the archai have the responsibility for holding the concept of the human being, the concept of what it means to be a personality, a persona, to personalize things. And that's again their connection to the human ego. The spirits of fire, like the second group, the middle group in any hierarchy, their responsibility is to make that, as it were, manifest, to bring it into existence. And the responsibility of the third group, in our case, the angels, is to bring it into form, to, as it were, make it really happen, and then to look after it. And that's why it's perfect that the angels live in our body of form and that their lowest member is a body of form. The archai are, by the way, very, very connected to long periods of human endeavor. If the angel's biography is about 72, 80 years, as long as a human being lives, then the angel ascends into the spiritual world and has its own experiences there. the archangels working with groups, especially are connected to groups that speak a common language. And you can see over time how one or another language has become sort of the dominant language of Europe. One or another language becomes the lingua franca of the explorers or the lingua franca of diplomats. When I was growing up in the 1940s and 50s, at the United Nations, French was the language that was spoken there. That was the language of diplomats. And if you were at all thinking of going into the State Department to work as a career diplomat or something like that, you had to learn French. That has changed powerfully, profoundly. Now English is increasingly the international language. Some feel Mandarin may be the next. But in any case, that language and its role and its power has behind it archangelic beings, because language brings people together into a commonality of thought, feeling, and many other things. The archai look after great periods of historical time. They're very connected with what human beings do, but only as human beings work together over hundreds or even thousands of years. We might say the biography of an archangel is as long as one language or another is dominant. So that could be 300, 400 years. The biography, the lifespan on Earth of an archon, the member of the archai, or spirits of personality, is 3,000 years. That's how long they like to remain connected with the Earth. This is dynastic time. And we only see it realized in its fullest way, in this sort of archetype of time, in ancient Egypt, where indeed there was nearly unbroken continuity of time, dynastically, one dynasty being very, very much like the one that came before it. And one sees that in the art, the repetition of the cycles again and again for about 3,000 years. So we see again this exponential quality, this sort of power of 10, even in the way these beings link themselves with humanity and the earth. Now let's look at the second hierarchy. I'm only going to look at one of these hierarchical denizens in a little bit of detail, and otherwise I'll just give a sketch. So here we have the lowest on the second hierarchy totem pole, the beings called powers. They also were called by the ancient Israelites the Elohim, and they appear at the in very much the beginning of Genesis. Steiner speaks of them also as spirits of form. Above them are the mites, also known as dynamis in Greek. Dynamic beings whom Steiner speaks of as spirits of movement. And then the lords, the leaders of this second hierarchical group, the dominions, kyriotetes in Greek, spirits of wisdom in Steiner's terminology. So we moving from above down, wisdom to movement to form. This is just the way a class teacher would like to organize a main lesson, to come in there with some real gem of wisdom that you want to bring to the children that day, to work through movement, and finally to help the children bring it into form. We can see in the second hierarchy above all these sort of archetypes of the way things incarnate and get realized on the earth. So let's look first at these spirits of form, these powers. Their lowest body is, they don't even have an ego. The ego has dropped away. They don't need it. They start with a spirit self, go on to life spirit, that's their etheric body, and then spirit man serves as their astral body. And then they have for their ego the eighth principle, a ninth, a tenth, an 11th principle as well. That is where they go in this very, very lofty direction. And these are beings whose responsibility is to bring things into form. Not that they necessarily get involved with the physicality of things. Of course, they're very, very high up and very, very lofty for doing that. But they create the circumstances into which physical form can then take place, into which physical mineral matter can fill, as it were. So this is a huge responsibility. We can speak of them in a way as the spirits of geological change, of geophysical change in the world. And of course, the Earth as a globe, as seen from space, as seen from the moon, let's say, does not seem to have changed very much. It undoubtedly didn't look all that different 1,000 years ago, or 3,000 years ago, or 10,000 years ago. In fact, Steiner says that these beings tend to work mostly in 25,000 plus year periods. That's their biography. So we've taken another huge, huge leap beyond even the spirits of personality. These beings, because they don't even carry an ego as their lowest member, they have little or no connection to the human individuality. They have little or no connection to groups of human beings connected by language or anything else. And the long 1,000 to 3,000 year periods, the cultural epochs, which are looked over and guarded by the spirits of personality, for the spirits of form, that's just the blink of an eye in a certain way. Not all that interesting or significant. They look after the great changes in the Earth, the Earth's relationship to other planetary spheres, to the sun and the moon, to great geological changes that occur on the Earth, the sinking of continents, the arising of others. Only once in the whole course of human history has it happened that Elohim, spirits of form, got directly involved with earthly life and even with human beings. This is one of the most exceptional events, Steiner says, in the entire history of the universe, and it will never occur again. But it had to happen that once. And I've already given you a hint about when it happened, because I've mentioned that Elohim, though we remember, of course, that Judaism is monotheistic, that the ancient Israelites' task was to bring monotheism to the world in a way. They were the first in most important respects, yet we still have the mention of Elohim. So if we're speaking of one God only, then who are these beings, and why are they mentioned in the Old Testament? And this is connected with one of the most important of Steiner's sort of revelatory teachings, and I'm going to hold that for a little while. But just to mention, don't forget these spirits of form. They have a very important role to play. Basically, it's a little bit like what a writer once said, why is it whenever God shows his hand in history, it's always the back of his hand? That the Elohim tend to show themselves through earthquakes, volcanoes, cataclysms of one kind or another. Not just one, but a whole raft of them, as it were, when something profoundly changing is going on in the earth. And we might think right now we are told that the earth is changing profoundly, that there's global warming. Some say it's because the earth's axis is shifting. Others say it's because of carbon dioxide building up in the atmosphere. But we could say in something like this, it might be that we are also seeing something of the hand of the spirits of form. But their basic task is to take the movement of the beings above them, the dinamis, the spirits of movement, to take that movement and to bring it to rest. And we could say that the whole world as we know it, the earth, the mountains, the sea, the plant world, the animal world, human beings themselves, we are all, as it were, movement brought to a degree of rest. Much still can move again. The trees can have the wind moving through them. We can move out of ourselves, but that form is frozen movement. Form is born out of movement. And the human being, able to, as it were, create form from within, has this great possibility, though these beings are so distant, of meeting them through form and through movement. So we could see, again, the incredible wisdom of the Waldorf curriculum, why Steiner introduced two subjects which were in a certain respect new, though one could see things like them in other schools, eurythmy, a new form of movement, and form drawing, a way of really working with pure form, which is preceded by movement. And then above them, the dominions, the spirits of wisdom. Now here we are coming into a realm again with these many, many unnamed principles. It's much harder to sort of comprehend the task, the nature of these beings. And now we are dealing with beings whose connection with the human being in a direct way is basically not there at all. And we could say in a certain respect, nor is there on one level, even a lot of interest in the human being. We are so small and so far away and so essentially foreign to these beings. But we'll go on next and look at the first hierarchy and see again if we can take in anything, understand something about the relationship of all of these beings as a collective whole to humanity.